Alumni Podcast with Tech and Prem.
Vet Alumni Podcast. I'm Tech. He's Prem. Music producers talking Philly sports, and there's a lot going on in Philadelphia sports. For the Eagles, it's where do we go from here? We're less than 2 weeks away from the beginning of the new league year, and there's a lot of work that has to get done to get under the salary cap.
Yeah, man. I mean, they're in a quandary of epic proportions with the largest dead cap hit in the history of the league on the books with Carson Wentz, $33.8 million.
Whew.
With the number of veterans probably leaving out the door, either by being released or free agency. Obviously, you know, Zach Ertz probably out the door. Deshaun, Alshon, gone. You're looking at a full rebuild, and I don't really know that I have the confidence in the front office to do it right. Draft-wise, they haven't shown they can.
As we inch closer to it, I mean, what's the move at number six for you, in your
mind?
Well,
I want to see either a cornerback like Patrick Surtain.
Yes.
To shore up that defense. When you're rebuilding, defense has to be the backbone.
I'm 100% on board with Patrick Surtain as the pick.
He's a phenomenal young player. Obviously, he's got an NFL pedigree with his father being a very, very successful pro player for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
If they cannot take or don't take Surtain, I would definitely prefer one of these two top flight or three top flight receivers that we're hearing about, whether it's Chase or Devontae Smith. But I don't know that we're going to see that.
No. And you know what? It worries me. My biggest fear is that they select with the number six pick a quarterback. I mean, that would be my that's my biggest fear right now.
Yeah, because then you're going to put yourself in the same position you just got out of.
Yes.
With a worse situation, because in this case with Carson, at least he had already proven that he can play like a franchise quarterback.
You right.
have a situation with Jalen Hurts where he is yet to prove that at for an extended period of time, not just a game or two.
And we'll be talking to Rob Motti about this coming up later on the Vet Line, because this is one of the main things I want to know is, what is he hearing? How does he feel about the idea of drafting a quarterback? I think it's absurd. I think it would be a foolish mistake for the Eagles to go and draft a Justin Fields, who's basically like Jalen Hurts, or like a Mac Jones, I'm hearing. I'm like, Mac Jones?
I know, especially at number six. When you're sitting top 10, you have to take a no doubt about it, undeniable, can play right away at a position of need guy. Quarterback,
right.
I guess you could still consider back quarterback a position of need, but not nearly as much as corner or wide receiver. Those are the two glaring needs. And even third,
yeah.
I'd even put offensive line third behind
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Yeah,
and then quarterback
absolutely.
Would be four behind that.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can sign a veteran right now. The latest name that's on my radar that I'm finding all the reasons why it should be Alex Smith. And I'll tell you why. Alex Smith is the ultimate game manager. He's almost a master game manager.
He's shown that.
In the history of the league, he's one of the quintessential game managers.
Maybe only behind Trent Dilfer, who hoisted a Lombardi as a game manager.
And there's been others. There have been others. But I think that Alex Smith epitomizes the role of the game manager, you know, QB. And when I look at Jalen Hurts, I see a guy who's got explosiveness. He's got superstar potential. I mean, he's got that Lamar Jackson MVP kind of potential.
He does.
Problem is he isn't great with the game management side of things. He could be a better game manager. And Alex Smith was a running quarterback as well. I feel like he could learn a lot from Alex Smith holding the clipboard. And you know why? Another reason why I like Alex Smith? He's not a name that when Jalen Hurts has one of those games where we lose and he throws two picks and he really had a bad game, the fans the next day aren't going to be clamoring for Alex Smith.
Very true. Very true.
So I feel like it's a win-win with a guy like that.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, you have to have a veteran backup, in my opinion, backing up your second-round quarterback starting in his first season.
Right.
Not his overall first season. We know Hurts gave us four games last year. We saw a little bit of good, a little bit of bad, and a little bit of great as well. But at the same time, you have to have some security behind that. I like to see guys play through their growing pains, though. especially as a quarterback. I want to see him play through bad games. I want to see let him play through bad games. And guys like us, we understand the bigger picture, but the truth is, Tech, the majority of fans don't really get what we're talking about.
No, they're seeing the micro,
and
I'm not saying that.
I'm not saying that to sound elitist or put us on a pedestal.
No, but you're correct.
It's true, because people react more so in an emotional short-term response than they do a long-term organizational response.
And that does not mean that they're not smart fans. We are a fan base of smart fans. We have one of the smartest fan bases in sports. Wouldn't you say that?
I definitely agree, and that's because of the passion that's involved.
Right.
We're one of the few cities in the country that have 4 professional sports teams.
Yes.
And all 4 major sports. You can count on 2 hands. Maybe even 1 hand. I didn't do the numbers.
Right.
How many cities have 4 professional sports teams in all 4 sports?
True.
So because of that, that plays into it. We have sports all year round, every year.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, the fans, we get a bad rap nationally, but they just like to do that. They like to poke fun at Philly because 60 years ago, a random no-name average Joe dressed as Santa walked across the field, and anybody would have been throwing snowballs at him. I don't care what city you're in.
We as a city and as a fan base will never live that nonsense down.
It is ridiculous. Every year, I'm waiting for the ESPN segment. Every year. Anyway, back to your point, you're right.
Yeah, I mean, I like Tyrod Taylor and Jacoby Brissett, too, by the way.
I like them.
But this fan base has to start thinking in the macro. We have to start thinking about the big picture here, guys. This next season, we are not Super Bowl contenders. Stop hyping yourself into believing that we are. Stop hyping yourself into believing that we are going to be a playoff contender that should win this division. We should not win this division. I don't care how bad this division is. We should not win this division.
Well, Dallas is probably going to win a division, in my opinion, and I hate to say that.
Right.
New York is not ready, and Washington is. Well, Washington could be the dark horse.
Yeah, well, I like Ron Rivera.
I like Ron Rivera too. The issue again is who's going to be their quarterback.
That's a big issue.
Taylor Heinicke. I mean, who is it going to be? Because that's who finished the season for them.
By the way, John Ritchie loves Heinicke.
It was Heinicke. Okay, Heinicke.
Yeah, gotcha. I always think of Heinigan.
Gotcha. Well, he had a very impressive last game of the year where he almost led them on an improbable comeback to win that last game of the year for them, which would have been a nice win for the kid. But, you know,
he earned himself a raise with that.
Absolutely. I think that, speaking to your point as far as the Eagles' win total this year, I would be surprised if Vegas dropped the initial over-under for wins this season if it was anything more than 5 or 6 for the Eagles.
And speaking of win totals and the number of games, that's going to move to 17 this next season. This will be a 17-game NFL season.
You know, that's,
moving forward.
Wow, so what that does for the single season record books is essentially destroys any validity.
You're adding another game in there.
The 17 game season records should then permanently have asterisks in the record books.
Yeah, like 17 game
season.
Like
for example, I think Peyton has the touchdown record, right? 55 touchdowns in a season.
But now with that extra game, could beat that.
And it can only be 56, but it's 17 games. So is one extra in the extra game fair to supplant Peyton's 55? No.
That is an interesting point here.
What if a guy breaks the single season rushing record by 3 yards because he has an extra game to get 3 yards?
Oh, wow. You're really bringing up. Let me tell you something.
Yeah.
It's
going to upset a lot of people.
Yes. There are credibility issues with this. You are now raising legitimate concerns.
But you know what? They're not worried about that. They're only worried about one thing.
The money.
The grand dollar.
I mean, I absolutely love it as a fan to get an extra game, but what you're talking about also
not if we're 6-11 at this point,
no,
or 5-12.
No, I'm not going to be happy to get an extra game if I know we are absolutely trapped.
If but, we're 5 know, for the draft, it's going to be meaningful.
I'm almost always down to see an Eagles game, even if it's a preseason when it means nothing. So, I mean, a game at the end of the year when you know your team's out of it, it doesn't make that much of a difference to me. But I originally was thinking that this wouldn't be such a great thing for the players. But your point about the validity of the record books moving forward, that is a major concern, I think.
Yeah, I mean, one whole game, 60 more minutes to get yards, catch passes, catch touchdowns, throw touchdowns, everything.
Everything.
Everything. And I mean, even for contract incentives. Think about the guys that sign contract incentives based on 16-game seasons. So if a guy has to, for example, if he gets 1,000 yards, he gets a $500,000 bonus. There's things like that in a lot of contracts, incentive-laden contracts.
Yeah.
What if he's got 993 yards going into that 17th game, and that 7 yards because of that extra game gives him an extra 500 racks in his bank account?
Wow. Yeah. Well, then it would be a good thing for the players.
For the players, yeah. And there's going to be plenty of money. I mean, we talk about money like, you know, because we're regular middle-class guys.
Absolutely.
$500,000 changes our life.
Oh,
totally. An NFL player making $20 million, $500,000 is like his interest in his bank account.
Yeah.
It's absolutely crazy.
Oh, boy. We're
so, yeah,
talk.
Vetline, Rob Motti, Associated Press sports writer, Phillies beat reporter. We're real excited to have Rob back on. Vet Alumni Members Association flashing its wings.
Yeah. Coming up next.
Pro Line Music.
Located at 490 Lincoln Highway in Fairless Hills, PA.
Pro Line Music.
Everything for the musician. Carrying all major brands. You find a better price, we'll beat it. Offering lessons in person or virtual. On-site repair service center. Rentals. Recording studio.
Pro Line Music. Call 215-736-8055.
One more time.
215-736-8055.
Yes, sir.
Pro Line Music.
Everything for the musician.
Vet Alumni. And now, it's the Vet Line.
Why don't you answer your phone?
Tonight, we're joined on the Vet Line by Associated Press sports writer, author, and Vet Alumni Members Association member, Rob Motti. Rob, thanks for joining us once again tonight.
Hey, it is my pleasure. What's up, fellas? How are you?
Good.
Yes, sir.
Obviously a little conflicted with the saga of and departure of Carson Wentz. It was shrouded in a lot of misinformation, controversy, which I know you've spoken on. What is your opinion of the deal, and have you spoken to Carson since the trade?
I have not, and other than I sent him a text message. But the deal itself, I think you can look upon in two different ways. One, the trade, what the Eagles were able to get for him, I don't think was terrible because Carson's coming off the worst season of his career. He was a bottom three quarterback. His stats were awful. And, of course, there was a lot of reasons for that. But given those circumstances, to be able to get a third-round pick and then the potential for a first-round pick, assuming he fulfills the playtime, to get that, I thought is in line with what I expected. Something in the 16 to 32 range as a first round pick, and then a little extra, a third rounder. So I think the trade itself is what we thought Carson was worth at this stage of his career, given the circumstances and how the season played out. But guys, the fact that the Eagles reached that point, the fact that Doug Peterson was fired, less than 3 years after winning a Super Bowl, and Carson was traded less than 2 years after getting a gigantic contract. To me, that's just an organizational failure from top to bottom.
Yeah,
absolutely. We tend to agree with you. We've talked about it at length, obviously. And, you know, looking forward then to the quarterback situation, from what you're hearing, are the Eagles more likely to draft a quarterback at 6 or attempt to sign a veteran, maybe like Alex Smith, who was recently released?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to draft a quarterback. And I don't think you should draft a quarterback because you invested in Jalen Hurts, a second-round pick that ultimately contributed to what happened with Carson Wentz and the failures in that with the franchise quarterback who you had. So I believe they owe it to themselves and Jalen Hurts to see what he can do over the course of a full season with a new coaching staff, a new system, and an off season where he gets to work out as the starting quarterback. So given that, I don't think they would take quarterback at number 6, but I certainly wouldn't rule it out because you never know with the Eagles and with Howie Roseman what they're thinking. As far as a veteran quarterback, I would actually prefer Nate Sudfeld. I don't see any need for this team, right? This team next year is going to be a rebuilding 2-14, 3-13, 5-11, 6-10 team. Why do you need a veteran quarterback in here who potentially, if Jalen Hurts is like 15 for 32 with three picks in week two, why do we need to hear fans screaming for Ryan Fitzpatrick or Marcus Mariota or Alex Smith?
Right. Exactly. You know what I
mean? Right? Just yes. Let Jalen Hurts go out there and be the starting quarterback. No pressure, no backup looking over his shoulder. Nate Sudfeld is good enough for me.
That's an interesting point, Rob. Interesting point. Now, how important is it, speaking of the draft, to get it right with the number six pick?
Oh, it's crucial.
Crucial. Hey,
absolutely. Like, you got to draft the Hall of Famer at number six. If they stay put at six, you have to hit, and not just hit. Like, this guy's got to be one of the best at his position for a decade. And that usually means potential Hall of Famer, because we know that this team has not had success in the draft. And you know what? Hitting on the number six pick isn't going to be enough for this team to turn them around. They have to have success in this draft throughout, on day one, yes. On day two, on day three. But they absolutely cannot miss on this pick.
Can't afford to.
No.
A lot of people are hypothesizing that the Eagles are going to shed a ton of salary. How many veteran guys do you think actually get moved or released this offseason?
I think there's going to be a handful of guys, and obviously Zach Ertz appears to be the leading candidate, and the writing is on the wall. We saw Zach in tears at his final news conference, so yeah. I'm sure he knows that that's inevitable. I think the only hang up right now is whether or not the Eagles are going to be able to get a compensation, what kind of pick that they'll be able to get for him. And there's even some thought and some consideration that they might release him, which to me is just crazy that Zach Ertz, a potential future Hall of Famer, and because I think he's still got 3, 4, 5 good years left in him. We've seen tight ends like Tony Gonzalez, Antonio Gates, Jason Witten, and other guys have success into their mid to late 30s.
Absolutely.
Right? And Zach is still young, and I think he can bounce back with the right team and have that kind of season. So the idea that he would be released is crazy to me. But we
crazy.
Just saw, right? J.J. Watt was just released, and then he got a big deal, too.
Yeah, and I don't know if you know this, Rob, but in the history of the franchise, Zach Ertz has been targeted more than anybody that has ever worn Eagle wings on a helmet.
I didn't know that. That's a great stat, man.
Most career targets. Only reason I know is because I was looking into some DeSean Jackson numbers for a segment last week, and right there at the top of the list, Zach Ertz and Brent Celek has number two. So two tight ends top the targets list for the Eagles franchise. It's remarkable to me.
It makes sense. Safety valve guys who you'll throw to underneath when things break down. And also, you look at the eras for both players. The Eagles lacked wide receivers during both Celek and Zach Ertz. They really never had a legit standout stud number one, other than the year where Alshon in 17. But even that year, he was really good. He wasn't, though, T.O.-like.
Right. I would think T.O. really, when you go over the last 20 seasons, would be the only close to or elite receiver that we've really had. It's remarkable.
Yeah.
Remarkable.
Yeah.
You know, we could have.
Jeremy Maclin had a great year, right? DeSean had three Pro Bowl seasons. But
True. But
DeSean's size and build, I never really considered him an elite. I just looked at him as a really good speed receiver, big time playmaker. But he was never to me like a DeAndre Hopkins, Calvin Johnson, a T.O., that kind of player.
No, definitely not. So shifting to the Phils now, I know you're a Phillies beat writer, close to the inner workings of the team. What's your overall impression of the team headed into spring training here?
Man, I think this team is an 85-win club, and things can break, which obviously if they win 85 games, it'll be the first time they've had a winning record since 2011, and it puts them right in the mix for a wild card and end that 9-year playoff drought. But I also feel like if things break right, if a lot of guys play to their capabilities, if they avoid injuries and just the chips fall right for them, they could challenge for close to 90, but I just can't predict that coming off three straight September collapses. I'm comfortable with 85 wins. I think they've really strengthened the bullpen, which is crucial. They had a historically bad bullpen. They can't be as bad, and they would have been a playoff team last year if they didn't blow one out of those 21 leads that they blew. So they're close. I like what they did in the offseason, and even though it wasn't enough to some people, they didn't bring in, they re-signed their guys, but it helped to add some arms. And I think the rotation depth with Matt Moore and Chase Anderson is going to help. It's going to give them some options there, give them some depth there too. So I really think this team's going to be fun to watch and exciting, and they're going to score a lot of runs.
Yeah, I think so too, and that could kind of mask any pitching issues that could pop up again. Like you said, last year, there were a lot of games that were just lost in the eighth and ninth inning. I mean, at least 10 were lost late, and if you add those to the win total, then you're right. They're right in the mix there in October baseball.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think it was 8 3-run leads, like eight of them. 8 3-run leads, 21 leads overall. And even though they finished 28-32, they only had to win one more game, and they finished 1-8, I believe, in their last nine games. So they're right there. They're right on the edge. Of course, that was the expanded postseason last year. We don't have expanded postseason. Here's the thing, though, guys. They're in a very tough NL East. The NL East is tough, top to bottom.
Yeah.
And to me right now, going in, I still look at them as a third-place team.
Odubel Herrera. Much debate over whether he should be on this roster or not and even afforded a shot to make the team. What are your feelings on this?
So he spoke today for the first time. He went 1-for-3. He got an opportunity to play in Dunedin against Toronto. He got a single. He played right field. He stole a base. He made a nice catch on a sinking line drive. And afterwards, I asked him, guys, what he's learned since the incident. And he seemed genuinely remorseful. He said he's become a better person. He said counseling has helped him. He's still with his girlfriend, who was involved in the incident. She, of course, didn't press charges back then 2 years ago. And he said the relationship is better. It's stronger now. I'm a guy who believes ultimately that everyone deserves a second chance if they're genuinely remorseful about it. And all of us make mistakes, and some more egregious than others. Obviously, you should. I would never, I don't think any of us would ever condone hitting a woman. It should never happen. There's no place for it in society, not just sports. There's just no place for it whatsoever. The Phillies are paying him $10 million this season, and it seems to me they're going to give him an opportunity to get that second chance. And I think they understand that he made a mistake, that he seems like he has changed as a person, that he's become a better person because of it. And, you know, that remains to be seen. I think some of his teammates are going to be willing to forgive and accept him, and others might look at it differently. And ultimately, guys, you know, it's between Odubel, his girlfriend, and you guys know that I'm a man of faith. And it's, you know, God is our judge, not Absolutely. Another man or woman.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I agree with second chances. I agreed with it when Mike Vick got a second chance, and I agree with it now with Odubel as well. He's a young man.
Yeah, and here's the thing, right? Like, I've been in prisons, man, over 100 prisons. I've spoken to thousands of inmates, and some of them have committed, I mean, there's murderers in there, there's rapists in there, some of the worst things ever, and it's easy to look at someone and forgive them when it didn't impact you, right? So, like, I could say, this guy's changed, this guy seems remorseful, but I've spoken to men in jail. I've spoken to these guys, and I've seen how they've changed. I've seen how they've learned from their mistakes, and Odubel seems to me, like, genuinely remorseful, and he's changed, and he's willing to do everything he can to prove it, and we'll see. I still think, guys, he's a long shot to make the team. I just don't, from a baseball standpoint, I don't know at this point, 2 years later,
what he has. And don't forget, when at the time of that incident a couple of years ago, he had been benched. He was terrible. He was hitting 222. He had an awful second half the year before that. So there was like a calendar year there that went by where he was just a really bad baseball player.
True. Rob, I get the feeling this is the make it or break it season for Scott Kingery. He started out looking like a stud and spent the last couple seasons kind of looking like a dud. What are you seeing from Scott Kingery so far?
I agree. I do think it's a make it break or break it year. And I thought it was pretty interesting last week where Charlie Manuel talked about Kingery getting that contract from the Phillies before he even played in the majors. And then all of a sudden he changed his swing.
Yeah.
And Charlie said he became a different hitter and he stopped doing what got him to that point. Hmm. And I think it's important, as Charlie uses the term know thyself, for Kingery to know who he is. 2 years ago, he hit 19 homers. And that projected over the course of a full season, because he didn't play 162, to where he would have been like a 25, 26 homer guy. That, while he's got those capabilities, I'd rather him not go up to the plate thinking home run. I want him to be a line drive, gap-to-gap hitter, get on base, use that speed that he has, hit doubles, and be that kind of like table setter. And if he's uppercutting, and you know what? I don't know how much launch angle, right? The idea of launch angle and Gabe Kapler and the hitting coach John Mealy back then, how much that impacted him. So it seems right now this spring training, he's going back to who he was before that, and I think that'll be in his best interest.
Good, good. Glad to hear you say that, because yeah. I always like Scott.
Yeah. I'm rooting for him to become that player again. It just looked like it got away from him.
Yeah, and to me, I think if I had a guess right now, we got the whole month to go, right? But if I had a guess right now, I think Kingery and Hazley will end up getting a bulk of the playing time in center field. And it might even be somewhat of a platoon out there. Joe Girardi has mentioned that a couple times. So with Hazley being a left-handed hitter, Kingery being a right-handed hitter, it might be a platoon in center. And then when McCutcheon needs a day off, you could slide Hazley in left field. That's also when you can give Roman Quinn an opportunity out there. So I think they got a lot of options. It would be nice to see Kingery just seize control of that center field job and be able to be penciled into the lineup every day rather than going to the ballpark wondering, what position am I going to be playing? Where am I going to hit in the lineup? And am I even playing? It would be nice to see him just take over and be that guy.
Yeah. A lot of people have said recently that they don't feel like Bryce Harper has lived up to his $330 million contract so far. I think that's completely absurd, but I was curious where you stand on that.
It's kind of hard to live up to a $330 million contract right now. Yeah, anything short of being an MVP it's not living up to it, right? But I think he's given the Phillies what they were looking for. He gave them a jolt in the box office 2 years ago when he signed. Last year, they couldn't have fans in the ballpark because of COVID. And today we find out that they're going to kick off the year with 8,800 fans. But I think he gave them exactly what they've been looking for, a superstar.
Yes.
Kind of player, a guy that fans want to see, and he's a showman. And Bryce Harper really, like, he gets it. He understands how to play the marketing game, and he's got a great team surrounding him, whether it's the Fanatic baseball bat or the Clearwater t-shirt or whatever it may be. He knows exactly what to say, and he does a great job with it. I think last year he was going to have a huge season, but then he got hurt. He hurt his back, and that hampered him towards the tail end. I don't anticipate him being a 330 kind of hitter, but if he could be 280, 40 homers, and 120 RBIs, I think we would all take that out of Bryce Harper.
Yeah.
And I don't see any reason why he can't do that.
Right.
Yeah, 40 home runs should be what a guy like that is hitting in that ballpark, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad that we get a full 162 this year. With the COVID restrictions looking to be lifted for the fans in attendance, how many games you're going to be attending, Rob?
Me personally?
Yeah, how many games?
I normally cover close to, depending on how good they are, right? When they were making the playoffs, I was in the close to the 60 range, not including playoffs. Once they started tailing off, I would make I would go to Eagles like OTAs in May instead of a Phillies game, right?
Yeah.
My target this year is 50. That's my target. Come to 50.
Nice. I hope to get to at least 10 myself. I know it's going to be a hot ticket. Well, hopefully it's a hot ticket. That means they're playing well.
Yeah.
But yeah, Rob, we always appreciate your insight and your information and your time. So thanks once again for joining us on the Vet Line today.
You got it, fellas.
Thanks, Rob.
Numbers don't lie. Numbers don't lie. You know that the numbers don't lie. Men lie, women lie, numbers don't.
Numbers don't lie. Look at the numbers. The numbers don't lie. Keeping it real. Keeping it real. Keeping it real. Keeping it real.
Numbers don't lie. Here we go.
Tech, much has been made of Joel Embiid's MVP campaign this season.
Yep.
The Sixers are still atop the East by that that small half-game margin over the Brooklyn
it's
Nets.
Slipping away.
It
friend.
Is. I mean, we're it's keeping pace, away. Though. We're keeping pace. They did win three of their last four games. You know, but Joel is turning in great performances again and again. So here's a look at some impressive Joel Embiid numbers. The man is consistent. In his last 10 games, Joe is averaging 30.8 points per game, which is a full point over his season average of 29.8. Second in the NBA, only trailing Bradley Beal's 33.2 points per game. So Joel Embiid from the center position, second in the league in scoring, and actually a point over his notch that he usually is at over the last 10.
That's excellent.
He's just locked in and loaded, and we had David Shepard talking about that same thing last week.
Yes.
In that stretch, Joe dropped 50 on the Bulls on February 19th and posted a stat line that has only been matched by Wilt Chamberlain as a Sixer. 50 points, 17 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, 4 blocks. They're the only two Sixers to ever post that line. Wilt did it 4 times, but in a notably different era. It's undeniably harder now for a big man to do that in today's NBA. Wilt was like a giant amongst dwarfs back then.
Oh, yeah.
You know, to a large extent. Not to diminish what he did. He was remarkable.
Yes.
But Joel, to me, it's more impressive in today's NBA.
I would agree.
You know, and that performance was also the first 50-point performance by a Sixer since Allen Iverson.
Ooh,
in 2005. It took 16 years for another Sixer to drop 50.
Practice? I'm talking about practice.
Not a game.
Practice.
Only 3 players this year. This is the number that I really had fun finding. I found this. I'm searching the ESPN stat categories. I'm trying to find
the pertinent
information.
You're the numbers guru.
I'm trying. Only 3 players in the whole NBA this season average at least 25 points and 10 boards per game. Joel, Giannis, and Jokic. All remarkable players. All either in the MVP talk this year or have been in the MVP talk.
Yes.
Very hard to do that in the NBA. 25 and 10 consistently. Only 3 guys. Not even LeBron.
No.
Not even Durant. Well, Durant's been injured, hampered. Not even Harden. Like, these guys are not posting
even
those
numbers. Harden has 7 triple-doubles since becoming a Brooklyn Net.
He has been on fire.
Unreal.
I'm going to get to James Harden in the NBA picks segment.
Okay.
Last number for Joel today, and the numbers don't lie, is his 3-point percentage.
Yeah.
Joe shoots from long range at a 41.7% clip, which is third among the 30 starting centers in basketball. The man simply does it all.
That's just absurd.
Tech, numbers don't lie.
Enter the center.
Yes! And the Sixers win it!
With Tech and Prem.
He scores! Bang, bang in the fire lane!
The Vet Alumni.
As we walk across the street, we enter the center. And joining us on the Vet Line now, our Sixers man in the streets. He is the man in the box.
I'm the man in the box.
Jimmy Graves from Dicebox Studios joining us now. Graves, Shake Milton. He had a 26-point game.
The question is, can we get that version of Shake consistently night in, night out?
I believe Shake has the talent and the qualifications to possibly be one of the main pieces in this rotation. I may even think that we may have to look at him starting over Danny Green. Opinion.
Totally agree. I could see it going that direction.
Yeah, it feels like it's been going that direction for a little while now.
Yeah, the kid is a scorer. He plays really hard. He plays like he doesn't have anything secured because he doesn't.
Right.
A reckless abandon, if you will.
We are about 3 weeks away from the deadline. And, you know, I still believe a major move has to be made to make this team a legitimate finals contender. Now, last week, Graves, we had CBS national sports writer Dave Shepard, who I love Dave, but he foolishly said on the Vet Line that he wouldn't touch this team. He loves them as is. Now, I think that's a national guy's take, if I ever
heard. Very fair.
Right. A national guy is just looking at the stat sheet, not really seeing the finer details of what we are seeing on a nightly basis. You agree with the assertion that we need a major move to be made in order for us to be a legitimate finals contender?
Well, when you look at teams like, you know, the Nets and, you know, other teams in our division who have bona fide superstars, like maybe three, you have to wonder, how do we stand up to them? So with that being said, I believe that I'm going to play the devil's advocate, because I believe that you should grow with, if your team is doing well, I think that you should grow with it. A lot of mistakes that the Sixers made in past years have been they've given up good young assets.
Yes.
Yeah.
To get, Tobias Harris's. And mind you, this year, Tobias is producing.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if it's because of Doc Rivers, which I believe it is.
Same.
You know, a comfort level that he has with Doc. And Doc is telling him, Tobias, just be you. But I don't think that they have to make major changes. I think they need key pieces. That's what I feel.
Some rotation pieces still.
Rotation pieces, yes, but I think it need to be qualified rotation pieces. You understand what I'm saying?
Right. Like,
and
like
I also think, I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say, when you say rotation pieces, you mean more like a Ilyasova as opposed to a Kyle Lowry?
Kyle Lowry.
listen. Now, I love my Philly boy. I do love Lowry. He's on the back end of his career. You have to think of, what do you have to give up to get Lowry?
Yes.
And I'm not willing to give up a young asset as far as a Shake Milton. Believe it or not, guys, I even have grown fond of Korkmaz.
He's growing on me too, I'll be honest.
I've grown a little fond of Korkmaz.
Well, he hit six threes on Monday night, so I'm sure that had something to do with it.
He is... His shot is quick. Mind you, sometimes he does have off nights. Which shooter doesn't? But he throws that out the window, and he's willing to put it up again. And his shot is quick, which we need, and he's also a three-point threat. Kyle Lowry is too, and Lowry can create his own shot. But I don't know if that is what we need. I think we need a stronger bench. And I think we also need Danny Green to come out of that starting rotation. But I wouldn't say that we need a major, major move. I think that we should just ride with what we have and let them grow together. We may not win it all this year, but you get better as you grow and learn each other.
Yeah, but isn't that wasting a prime year of Joel Embiid's career?
It sounds like Graves agrees with Dave Shepard.
Hey, it does sound like you're agreeing with Dave. You know, I tried to mold this so that you would agree with me and not Dave Shepard. But all right.
As brothers, we may agree on a lot of things.
Right.
But when it comes to the pure understanding and just thought process, I think that sometimes when you tear teams up, you kind of mess up the chemistry. Take it back to the Sixers when they had Theo Ratliff, Iverson, and all of those guys. When they went to the championship with the Lakers, Mind you, they did get Mutombo, and they traded Theo when Theo was hurt.
Yeah.
But it messed up the chemistry of that team. When they got Mutombo, yes, you did get the defensive player of the year. Yes, you did get a 7'2" center who they thought could go against Shaquille.
But no one could really go against Shaquille.
No one can go against that 18-wheeler. Nobody can.
Yeah, and Shaq was only in like his 9th season.
Shaq was in his 9th season. Also, with Ratliff, which I think they made a wrong decision, do you get Mutombo because he is the defensive player of the year? He's 7'2". He was awkward. He was clunky. He didn't fit in their system. Ratliff coming back a year later, you don't know what you would have got. But when Ratliff ran that floor, he looked like a deer with that team.
Yeah, so you want to avoid the same thing happening again.
All right.
I want to avoid it. I want to avoid it. So I don't think that you make too many changes. I think you have to bring in certain changes, but not major changes.
If you're taking this year of their window away, it's not just taking a prime year of Joel Embiid's career away. It's taking an MVP level year away.
You know what? There's one thing we're not talking about here. This squad, this core with Ben and Joe specifically, this is about to be their 4th playoff run together, I believe, right?
Yeah. Right.
Okay. That level of experience, that intangible, is something that is not going to show up on any stat or standings sheets.
Okay.
You know, so okay. I think that's going to play a role. They're not going to go in and have a terrible series against a team like Boston in the first round or a squad like that. They have a good shot to play for the Eastern Conference title.
Yeah, I'm not even concerned about the Bostons, the Torontos, the Milwaukees. I'm concerned with Brooklyn. I just see a team very much like the Golden State Warriors team that won back-to-back chips. I look at them like that kind of squad, and that's just an unbeatable thing. Now, granted, Kevin Durant is out, so he hasn't been playing this season, and they haven't been developing this three-headed monster, but it will be there in the playoffs. It will be there. And this, I don't know how the Sixers can beat a team like that.
You have great reason for concern. Now, let me just say this. I feel that the growth that the Sixers have done, and mind you, we're talking about 2 superstars. You have Joel and you have Ben. And actually, of late, Ben has been playing like a monster also.
Yeah, he's very aggressive. Very aggressive.
Very, very aggressive, which shocked me. What did he put up, 42 the other day when Joe wasn't there?
He's starting to put up points.
He's starting to put up points now with Joe in the game.
And he did it without even shooting a 3-pointer.
without shooting a 3-pointer. And then you have Tobias, who has stepped up. Consistent. He's been consistent. So now, in all actuality, you also have a 3-headed monster. It's just that you think Brooklyn's 3-headed monster may be stronger. I concur somewhat, but sometimes it's not about who's stronger. It's about the chemistry of the team.
That's very true. That's a good point.
Let me just give you one more point that I want you to understand where we speak about chemistry. In 2001, the Sixers had the coach of the year. They had the player of the year. They had the MVP. They had the defensive player of the year.
Yeah.
And they still could not beat LA. So they had all those accolades, but they still couldn't beat the team that was well-polished and oiled.
Because you had one of the greatest of all time players on that LA squad, which trumps all the other season awards. You know, you got a guy like Kobe out there, top 3-4 player all time.
It makes plenty of sense. And that's what I'm getting at. Because you have all these accolades and these players, meaning that Brooklyn may have these players, but it's only one ball. So you have to think about it on that aspect also. It's not to say that they can't be beat. It's just if you play the game correctly, well-oiled team, you may have a good chance of beating them.
Good point. Graves,
Thanks for joining us on the Vet Line. Talk to you after the All-Star break.
Thanks, Graves.
Oh, man, y'all take it easy. It was great being here. I appreciate you guys.
It's time for Prem's Picks.
These games are a blowout, a human lock. You can bet your children's unborn children on these games.
Prem's NBA Picks, you are on fire.
Well, Tech, another undefeated week as the Jazz beat the Lakers easily last week. And the Bulls covered the 5 points at home against the T-Wolves. I should add, almost didn't happen. They had to get into overtime to get that margin. That game almost ended as a 3-point Bulls win. but nevertheless, my mark stands unblemished.
Yes.
At 7-0 picking NBA games.
Money in the bank.
Here are this week's locks.
Locks.
Tech, we mentioned them earlier. James Harden makes his return to Houston tonight. And the Nets are 8-point road favorites in this one. I think they win by 10+, and Harden has a Harden-like night, dropping 30 to 40 points in the game that the Nets never trail in. Houston lost to the Cavs in their own building Monday night, looked very poor doing it, scoring 90 points. Nets minus 8, lock.
Lock.
The Trailblazers are 1-point home dogs tonight against the Golden State Warriors, which is a pick. It's a pick 'em, and I think the Blazers win outright. Albeit being a pick 'em game.
I'm a Dub Nation guy.
I understand. I generally am as well, but Portland is very underrated, coming off a nice 12-point drubbing over the Hornets on Monday night. Trailblazers at home. Lock.
All right. Lock.
So to recap, we have the Brooklyn Nets minus 8 in Houston.
Lock.
And Portland straight up to win at home versus the Warriors.
Lock.
This has been Prem's NBA Picks.
See you next week.
Vet Alumni.